Okay, guys, welcome to the show. This is Deborah Gets Red Pilled, episode 119. It's Saturday, April 23rd. Oh man, it was my mom's birthday yesterday. I didn't call her.
Did Emily call her?
We sent her a present, okay. So I should give her a call after this.
Yeah.
She got the present, so. Man, I really messed up. Oh, how's it going, Deborah?
It's going well. Thank you.
Yeah, that's good. How's your day today?
My day was great.
Yeah.
It was beautiful, sun, 70 degrees here.
Yeah, we got the same. Finally. Finally, the sun came out here. Yeah. It's so nice. It's so nice. And it stays nice out later here than it does where you're at now. So
yeah.
It really just starts getting nice at like 4:30, you know, and then it.
Yeah.
Really... So I went out today and I need to fix a bunch of the fencing for the sheep and stuff like that. So we're doing that. And yeah, we went over to Longview, Washington and did some 12-step stuff. Hadn't done that in a couple years. So it was good. It was good. Made me feel good, happy. And it was, you know, I kind of left doing that stuff because in the towns, I'd been doing it in Oakland, California, San Francisco, California, and then Portland, Oregon. And in those places, it was extremely woke. And it was, it was a scene.
Mm-hmm.
And you go over to Longview, Washington, and it is stereotypically what people who've never been to an AA meeting think an AA meeting is. You know, it's the real deal. It's down and out, you know, white trash drunks. And it was good. It was good. Felt some relief from it, you know. So
awesome.
Yeah. I portrayed some pretty despicable addict behavior this week that I felt pretty guilty about, so I'm glad that I got to go do it.
Wow.
Yeah. I mate, should I tell the story? It's not terrible, sure. Terrible, but it's kind of a big deal, you know.
Well, yeah. Unload yourself.
Yeah, like I already did it, you know, I had to do it with Emily because she's the one that it affected the most. But yeah, I've been feeling, you know, like pretty overwhelmed lately and just kind of everything is, should be perfect, but just kind of feeling like something's missing, you know, and it's the whole spiritual side of my life, I think, is what I don't have. Uh-huh. So I've been trying to fill the gap by buying things and with stuff, and it never works, you know. As soon as I get the thing that I want, it's just on to the next thing, and it doesn't bring me that relief that I want it to bring, you know. And mm-hmm. I'm having a hard time with it. I'm like addicted to buying things off the internet. I got an email. It's so hard these days with, you know, looking at your phone all the time. It's just constant barrage of advertisements. And I got like an email from a gun store in Portland, and like this gun I've been looking at was on sale for super cheap, but I don't make my own money anymore. You know, Emily and I are sharing everything and she's the one making the money. So I know if I said like, hey, I'm going to go buy this gun and head to Portland tomorrow to go pick it up, she'd be like, what are you talking about? I just got a gun, like a super custom made one that took like, it was like an 8-month process to get it all done. I just got it in the mail, you know? And, yeah, so she went to work. I waited for her to go to work and I drove into Portland and I felt like terrible the whole way. I was like, man, I should pull over. I should call the gun store, cancel the order, call Emily, tell her I did this. And it was just like, I was in a choose your own adventure book and I just took like every wrong door, you know, every wrong thing that I could do, I did. And, you know, I got it and I went to Trader Joe's in Portland to buy stuff for dinner. And I was like thinking like, man, how am I going to hide all the stuff with the Trader Joe's brand name on it? or am I going to make an excuse up to say like why I was there at Trader Joe's in Portland? Cause there's no Trader Joe's by where I live, you know? And yeah. So I didn't tell her.
The webs we weave.
Yeah. And it's like all, it was all just all these little lies for no real reason, you know? And yeah, I got home and I started cooking dinner and I was just like feeling so bad. So I texted her. I was like, hey, everything's okay. Call me when you get a chance. And she called me and I finally told the truth after the fact, which is better than not telling the truth at all, but not as good as telling the truth right out of the gate. So, you know, that's if you're like, if you know anything about people that are like me, little stuff like that, even though it doesn't seem like a big deal, leads over and over and over again, leads to people doing things like going and drinking again or something like that. So yeah, so we talked about it pretty intensely and she handled it really well, didn't get too mad at me, but said she was worried more than disappointed or mad. So kind of decided that I need to make a few changes. So I'm going to try some other stuff and hopefully it helps. You know, I need to get back to the jiu-jitsu gym and I don't know if I want to do AA like regularly anymore, but I need to do something spiritually. So I think I'm going to go check out some Orthodox Christian churches in Portland. And I'm really excited about that. So
Orthodox, what does that?
No, it's like the Russian kind of Russian version of, this is a terrible description, but the Russian, Greek, or like Syrian version of Catholicism.
Because I don't know much, if any at all, about Catholicism, what draws you to that versus say another type of Catholic or Christian church?
It's the least watered down and the most like, it's the Christian faith that is still immersed in tradition, the original tradition, more than anybody else. It hasn't it hasn't slid down that slippery slope of embracing like woke policies and all that stuff like that, you know. Which Protestant, all the Protestant faiths have, and especially the Vatican. So, and I don't want I don't want anything to do with the Catholic Church. So, I don't think I'd have to look into it. I don't think they've had the issues that the Catholic Church has had. Their priests are married, and they have like their wives are like first ladies, kind of in the church. You know, they have a role. Like in the Russian church, I forget what you call them, but they like translate, you call them mama, but in Russian. So yeah, I'm going to check it out. There's a huge, so they have, yes, it's crazy. They have Greek, Russian, they have Ukrainian ones too. And then they have, they call them Antiochian, like Antioch.
Yeah.
And those are the ones that are from the Middle East, like Syria. So, and they have all of those, and they have they're all the same, but they just all have their own kind of different flavors. So I'm going to go check all of them out, I think, on different weekends. They kind of have like these big elaborate ceremonies, masses.
Someone was just telling me they went to the Greek Orthodox Church in the city for the Easter. They always have a big dancing. I mean, it sounded like a really cool thing to do, to attend. Yeah. So just throwing that in. But I think that's really, I applaud anything, any source of spirituality, wherever it comes from. I think that's great.
Yeah, it's Easter for them this weekend. So I think they have like services tonight from like 11 p.m. till 3 a.m. And then they have another one that starts tomorrow at like 9:30, you know. And they have I was reading online, their services are weird. like they have like a pre one that people show up to, and then they have another one that starts an hour later, but people are just kind of like coming and going the whole time and like shuffling around. And if you've never been, you'd be like, why are these people like walking in late and like going and lighting candles and doing all this other stuff? But yeah, it's like that. So there's a lot of people with, remember Buck Johnson, who was on the show, and then we went on his show.
Yeah.
He's just learning about it and starting to go in his little town in Texas. And there's like a pipeline from guys like me who kind of used to be, feel like very libertarian, and then kind of feel like anarchist, and then kind of feel like, ah, oh, this is all stupid, to orthodox pipeline. Like,
Interesting.
Yeah. And it's just like people that are feeling, kind of just unsatisfied with society of today, just because there's no
disenfranchised.
Yeah. And there's just watered down spirituality, and the Christianity that we're fed since like we're little kids in the 80s was, like I've said it before, I think all that evangelist 700 club, you know, Pat Roberts style Christianity from the 80s, the moral majority, right? You know, remember those guys?
Oh, yeah.
I think that was weaponized to make people hate Christianity and make like young people my age, for the most part, have it their opinion about what Christianity is today. Uh-huh. And then you mix on that, you mix the Catholic Church into that as well, you know, and that's enough to like make people be like, oh, I don't want anything to do with organized religion.
Well, you know, so many, the names that you mentioned, I mean, it's all about raising money, you know, and having a big, what's that Crystal Palace Church in Texas?
Joel Osteen, him.
Yes, yeah.
The guy who wouldn't let anybody say, and he bought the Houston Rockets old, where the Houston Rockets played. They got a new stadium, and he bought the old one, and then like wouldn't let people stay there during the floods.
Yeah, well, that'll turn somebody off right away.
Have you ever heard of Father Seraphim Rose?
No.
He was a Orthodox priest, and he was in San Francisco in the 70s and 80s. And he was a guy who would come, he was an American guy who had come from, you know, just the regular form of Christianity, and been a seeker of the truth, and found that and went real deep into it. And he had a newsletter and a fellowship, I guess, in San Francisco, but it was really, really small. And then he started a monastery like way out in the middle of nowhere on Highway 36 up in the mountains. Highway 36 is what connects I-5 to 101. You get it at you go up to Red Bluff, like north of Chico, south of Redding, and then you head west on 36. And out in the middle of nowhere in this little town called Platina, he had a monastery, and he just had this like little shack cabin that he lived in. But he came down, there was a course on like comparative religions at UC Santa Cruz in the 80s. And in 1980, it was like, because there was a lot of gurus and stuff at that time and kicking around in that area. There's a lot of people, you know, in the New Age movement and the spiritual movement trying to find spirituality and using LSD and mushrooms to try to find it. And he came down to that and gave a lecture to that class from his mountain monastery. And it's in print. It's a short book, and I'm reading it now. So it's pretty cool. And he's apparently he's dead now. He died in the 90s, but he was the closest thing, I think, to becoming an American saint. So I don't know if that's in the Orthodox religion or the Catholic religion or what. So yeah,
so sounds good. Sounds real good.
But we're getting next month Buck Johnson's going to come on and kind of talk to us about that progression from where we were into being interested in that.
Interesting.
Yeah. So you're welcome to learn with us if you want.
Yeah.
But other than that, what else is going on?
What else is going on? Went to, I think I already spoke to you since I went into the city to see. Yeah, I did.
Yeah. You went and saw your, went and saw the Viagra Boys. You got VIP seats. You had tons of fun, right?
Had tons of fun. And so that was my big event for the week. That was, that'll tide me over for a little bit.
Yeah. That's fantastic. Well, let's just do a little bit of business. Our guest is in the waiting room. And so, guys, we're a value for value production. So anything that you can do to help, whether it be time, talent, or treasure, we'd really appreciate. And we had some producers this week. So Ashley Matthews and Selena Carr are our associate producers. Thank you guys for your donations. Really appreciate
them. Thank you so much to you both.
And then my old apprentice, the guy that I used to be his boss in the elevator constructors, Dennis, sent me a really nice donation. So he's the executive producer this week.
On Dennis.
Yeah, Dennis is a great guy. He is a Romanian immigrant. And we kind of connected on being against all the woke stuff, and he's a Christian as well. He's got a bunch of little kids, and he's taken time away from the trade to take care of his new baby. He got a new house, and we really appreciate the help, and I'm glad I get to stay in contact with a couple people from that old life. There's not very many I'd like to, but I'm glad him and I are still talking. So
that's good.
Yeah.
I think that a part of, the stuff that goes on in your head right now is that, you used to be surrounded by people every day, at your work, and now you're, working at home and not surrounded by people. And that's got to be a difficult transition for anybody.
Yeah. And the money stuff is hard to kind of navigate with Emily. Cause she's, generous and willing to let me say my money is your money, and I have a debit card, that I can use, but it's just like mentally weird for me to like be spending somebody else's money that seems like somebody else made.
But you are an equal contributor to your life, to your joint life. So.
Yeah. Oh, and to everybody who sent me messages about how to deal with my rat problem, thank you so much. It's gotten much better. That grandpa's feeder is really helping out, and the fact that I'm not pouring their fermented feed on the ground anymore is really helping out too. So I do think I'm going to stick a hose down one of the holes and see if I can eradicate some of the problem that way too. But
are they eating the chicken feed?
Yeah.
Oh.
We had this big, these big green tubes, they're chicken feeders, and they're just like open. So they have like a little hole in them that the chickens stick their heads in. And they're just gravity fed. You fill up the tube, and the rats would run in there, and the birds would eat it too. And so it's like you're losing a ton of money, and then you just have a bunch of gross rats running around. Like they got a hole, like I said, they got an intricate tunnel system like the Viet Cong, so we got this thing called the grandpa's feeder. It was kind of expensive on Amazon, but it's it works. And they have to step on like the whole front of it's like a pedal that they have to step on, and it pops the lid up. So you train them, you start, it has these little holes where you put these bolts through it so the lid stays open all the way, and they eat like that. They say to leave it that way for a week, and then there's lower holes, so after that week you take it out and you put it on the lower holes, so they step on it and it goes up a little bit then. And they've been doing that for a couple of days, and then in a day or two I'm going to take it all the way out, so they'll step on it and it'll close when they're not eating. So
clever.
Yeah, but
smart.
Yeah.
Little chickens.
Yeah, just
it's good stuff.
Yeah, I think that's a good intro. Let's welcome our guest. I think you're really going to enjoy our guest today, Deborah.
Okay. Looking forward to it.
Yeah. Okay, guys, we're back and we're here with our guest today, who is Allison Pillow. So Allison is a certified holistic personal trainer and nutrition lifestyle coach. She's a podcast host of the Integrate Yourself podcast, and she just came out with a book called Finally Thriving. How's it going, Allison?
Good. How are you, Adam?
I'm really well. I met you at a No Agenda meetup in Portland. Yes. At Dick's Primal Burger, which is owned by your husband, correct?
Yes, that is correct. Yeah.
Yeah. It's it was really nice to meet you there. I sat next to you and we kind of talked for a long time and I felt like we had a good connection. And then I found out that you had a podcast and then, we're here now. So
yeah, it was great. Yeah. It was great to connect. I had the similar experience. Yeah. Really nice.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there should be one probably coming up in a week or so. I'll probably head down to that one too. So
cool. Yeah.
Do you listen to No Agenda all the time?
Pretty frequently. Yeah. It keeps me up to date on what's happening. I don't listen to the regular news anymore. So
yeah,
it's been years since I've listened to the news. I stopped listening to it a long time ago because I just realized it creates more stress and anxiety. And it's just all about so much negativity. They're trying to get you wrapped up in all of that. So once I realized that, I was just like, it's a waste of my time. And so now I listen to No Agenda because there is a comedy show. So they're also in the industry, or they have been in the industry. So they know all the tricks and everything about what they do behind the scenes with the media. And I just love to learn more about that kind of stuff too. And what they point out, what's currently going on. So that's fun to listen to.
Yeah. There's this guy, Mark Clare, and he hosts this podcast called Lions of Liberty. And I heard him describe how important No Agenda is before. And he just pretty much said, like, they are just rolling out this parade of absolute horrors and talking about it with levity and humor and like making it so like you can actually listen to the most horrible stuff in the world and be able to digest it for, it's 6 hours a week. And most people that are into No Agenda listen to both episodes regularly, if not live, but pretty close to when they come out on podcast form,
Absolutely. So, yeah. I like that they bring the comedy aspect into it because otherwise, if you can't laugh about what's happening right now, then what else, there has to be some kind of comic relief brought in because of the intensity of what's happening. So it's nice to be able to look at it that way. Yeah.
Yeah. And the meetups have been really cool. I think I've been two or three of them, but it's awesome to just be able to sit down and meet people who are kind of into the same stuff as you. And sometimes some you connect with, some you don't, but it's just good to be, especially when the whole lockdown thing was still going on, especially in Portland, so.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Great people I've met through that group for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I just kind of looked up your bio on your website, but do you want to tell everybody a little bit more about what you do and all your titles and everything like that?
Yeah. So I've been a holistic fitness and nutrition and lifestyle coach for close to 20 years now. It's been a pretty long time. I started out with being a competitive gymnast from about the age of 5 to 21 or 22. I did it in college and got a scholarship in college and did it for 3 years and then decided that was enough. I just decided to retire, not even do my last year because I ended on a good year. Yeah. And just because I had all these injuries and I was like, I didn't have any injuries this year. So let me just end right here. This is perfect. And I was tired of doing that. I wanted to do something else. So I transferred to Georgia State University from Radford University, which is where I was going for pre-physical therapy, and transferred over there to do exercise science and then ended up with an exercise science degree. And the way exercise, I learned things from that, but I didn't really learn a whole bunch about how to functionally train people or really do it holistically. And so from then I discovered the Czech Institute through a friend of mine who was working at a personal training gym And then I'd also seen this video of Gabrielle Reese training Paul. She was training with Paul Check, who is the owner of the Check Institute, or he started it. I was like, my God, what things that he's having her do. That's amazing. I want to learn how to do that.
In the 90s?
I think so. Yeah.
When she was like the MTV sports chick and like still doing volleyball and all that.
Yeah. So he had trained Laird Hamilton, which is her partner. Yeah. And his training was very unconventional. He was really thinking outside the box compared to how most people were training athletes back then, and really getting amazing results because he was bringing in a piece of the nutrition and just getting really just athletes to go towards more organic whole foods. Whereas before, you know, they hadn't been eating that kind of thing. They were eating really, you know, the junk foods, conventionally farm foods, those kinds of things. Many of them still are, but like he started that movement of really educating people in the difference between the two things. And that was something that really stood out to me because when I got his book, How to Eat, Move, and Be Healthy, I was astounded by the difference I felt just by switching over to organic and gluten-free foods. I was like, I don't have this joint pain anymore. My digestive stress has gone away. I'm like, this is incredible. And that's one of the first things that turned me on to that way of living, the holistic lifestyle and nutrition way of life. And so, you know, there's other things that has happened that I'll share with you guys within that, but I'll just kind of continue and finish my story of how I got to be doing this and what I do now is, you know, I started out as a regular fitness trainer, you know, graduated from university and then learned all these holistic methods of helping people. And it was not even just food or exercise. It was also integrating emotional intelligence and helping people navigate their emotions. And then also just deeper aspects of what people are going through as they go through the process of change. And so I learned that through the years of helping people both in the gym and now online and in person and those kinds of things, and decided after the last couple of years, you know, it was like, I feel like we're going backwards with this information. And I, you know, I've been telling people one-on-one and working with people one-on-one, but not really on a large scale, not sharing a lot of the information that I know and have learned over the years as far as what real natural health looks like and what our bodies are meant to do, what our bodies can do, the potential behind that. And I really wanted to share that with a larger audience after what happened this past couple of years. So mainly because we were getting the wrong information and it was deliberate. And I saw that and I'd seen it before being in this field. You know, I've seen a lot of things that people are now seeing in the health industry, in the medical industry, in the pharmaceutical company with the pharmaceutical companies as well. But it just didn't really seem like people cared that much about it or knew that much about it until all this stuff started happening. And I was like, oh, okay. Wow. And I hadn't seen it to that level either before. So I decided I would write a book because I'm like, this information needs to get out. I need to do my part in sharing this with people and how they can integrate true holistic health in their life. It's real easy and simple because our bodies know what to do. We just have to be able to know how to support our bodies. If it's too complicated, I usually tell people then it's probably not it's probably not what's natural. It's probably not what's right for you, for most people, because, you know, the pharmaceutical companies and the food companies, the supplement, everybody in this industry makes health really complicated and it's kind of fear-based. So like, you know, you don't want to get sick. So do all these things to stay healthy. You know, it's like fear-based mentality around wellness. And that's really not the way to go about it. That's a kind of a child parent way to approach wellness instead of taking, you know, responsibility for yourself and owning your journey of that and trusting that we have everything we need. All we need to know is how to support it. So I ended up writing a book during those the 2 years of the pandemic, and then recently published that. So I'm an author now as well as a coach, and I coach people one-on-one with health and fitness. And now I'm doing a lot of more speaking and public appearances and those kinds of things. So I wear a lot of hats at the moment, but it's really fun. I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, I really like the thought of not using fear. It's like when you go to the dentist and they get mad at you for not flossing, you know?
Yeah.
where have you been speaking at recently?
Well, just on a lot of podcasts mostly. I've been doing, I'm setting up a few live speaking appearances now because of, you know, everything that's lifted. And I am trying to plan some in California, one in Sedona. I would like to do more in Portland. I'm trying to get that going. I did one just recently at Dick's Primal Burger. For the Weston A. Price Foundation. So
really?
Yeah.
Oh man, I wish I would have known about that.
Yeah. Well, I'll see if I can get another one going. But that was really fun. And it gives me an opportunity to talk to people. And usually I'll share a chapter and then we'll talk about it afterwards. And then they can reflect on how that, what came up for them as and there was so much after that last one with the Weston A. Price Foundation. It was like amazing. And many things that I hadn't thought about before, like we have all these different ideas of how we would like to thrive, you know, but yet we're given an idea of thriving as just one thing. Like, this is what thriving looks like. And this is what you should be doing if you're thriving and how you want to, you know, get to thriving. And it's just like, that's just not true. I mean, everybody has different ways of doing it. Like, you know, for me personally, I love to be able to express myself in any given moment, like without any inhibitions, you know, like all the judgment that I felt and the critical voice I had in me before was a form of suffering for me. And I really wanted to lift that. And this allows me to be healthier because now I can express myself when I'd like to do that. And so for me, that's thriving. For other people, it's just really going out maybe and doing the things they love, you know, going out skiing or dancing or playing with their kids and those kinds of things and not having to worry about any pain in their body and having lots of energy. And so those are some of the things I really wanted everybody to think about as it relates to that, because, you know, if we don't start really connecting to the reasons why we're doing things, the purpose behind it, that intention, then we're just going with what everybody tells us to do, you know, what authority tells us to do, what our friends and family are telling us to do, instead of just questioning things and getting curious about, you know, why we're doing something, you know. And this is heavily ingrained in the fitness industry. It's just like going to the doctor or the dentist. You know, it's something you have to do. You have to suffer through. You have to make yourself do it. You have to, you know, spend all these hours, no pain, no gain, right? But it doesn't have to be that way. You can make it a very enjoyable experience, and it can get you results, right? So we're moving into this new time where, we're embodying really truly what we want. We're able to do that in a way that is serving. So, you know, making sure that you're not doing it because you're trying to meet a need of judge, or you feel judged by others. So you feel like you got to do it, you know? So it's a deeper issue here that, you know, kind of has created groupthink in our society that I'm trying to get people to start reflecting and ask themselves, is this really, do I know why I'm doing this? You know, and just ask that question, you know.
Deborah, do you have any questions?
Well, I'm wondering if you can like narrow it down a little bit with some examples of, you know, ways that people are trying to fulfill their what they think they should be doing versus how to look at it in a way and make it a, you know, just living your life in a pleasurable way and maintaining good habits and health.
Yeah. I mean, it's, it can go hand in hand, you know? Yeah. So the thing is, we have to start somewhere. We have to start playing around with different ways of being healthy. And if it's, you know, I'm not saying not go to the gym, not work out, but, you know, start there. How do you know, is that enjoyable to you? Do you like working out with weights? Is that just something that you heard that everybody says, this is how you get in shape? Or would you rather just go for a walk in nature? Would you rather just go, you know, do something fun, like take a bike ride or maybe do some body weight exercises, you know, a short body weight exercise round or something like that. So I'm just giving people options and and how to create that practice for themselves. And I'm just saying, like, we have kind of learned just one way to do it. And this translates into everything that we do in our life, right? So if we can start with our own wellness and our own relationship with ourselves, then it's going to open the door to so many more possibilities. And we're going to be able to get curious about our lives and about really what we want to be doing instead of just doing what we've been told to do. Does that make sense, like, when I put it that way?
Yeah. I mean, I, you know, of course, put it into my own experience. And yeah. I always thought I hated going to the gym and that it was, you know, torture and punishment until finally I found the right gym for me, I guess.
Exactly.
And I've been at it for a number of years and I look forward to it and I enjoy it. And, you know, I like to complain about it, but that's part of the fun.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. Like, it could be the environment. It could be, you know, it could be anything about that situation that maybe you're just kind of pushing through it because you feel like you have to, but then, you know, you change your environment. Now you enjoy it more. So the enjoyment aspect of it is what we want to connect to, because otherwise we're not going to continue to do it. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
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 What advice do you have for people that are having a really hard time getting motivated to, who've been quite active maybe in the past and are having a, maybe kind of because of the last 2 years fell off their routine. I'm not talking about myself, I promise you. but are having a hard time getting back to the gym, making excuses and, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's a couple of things you can look at. And these are things I have in my book too, about, first of all, energy. Like, we have to look and see first, like, do we even have the energy to do a workout, you know? Most times people aren't very motivated because they just don't have the energy to do it. Like, we haven't gotten enough rest. We haven't nourished ourselves enough with food. We have been under a lot of stress this past couple of years. And so that also plays a factor. So if you've been under a lot of trauma, stress, you've had a lot of big changes in your life most recently, this will probably curtail your motivation, you know? So start doing things that you feel like you can do. Like, for me, it's always, I can walk every day, you know, no matter what, I'm just going to do that. So that's one place to start. And also ask yourself, am I giving myself enough, you know, food for regeneration, enough rest, enough playtime, enough relaxation, those kinds of things. And maybe creative time too, for yourself, if you have, you know, the space for that as well. But, you know, it's taking in all the factors of your life and what you've been through, and understanding that any stressful experience, the body is going to, you know, respond the same. So we want to make sure that we're supporting the body with that, and so it can regenerate cells and create, you know, just create healing in the body, so that you'll have the energy to do something like a hard workout. Like, a hard workout is really great if you have the reserves to you know, come back after that, so that the body has to go through a regeneration process. So you're not going to be motivated to do that if you don't have enough to regenerate afterwards, if that makes sense. Yeah. That's where I would start. I'm not saying that's where everybody, you know, you could just, it could just be also kind of a facade mode, you know? So we kind of got into a place of just feeling stagnant, you know, with our, what's going on. Cause it's a kind of a, it's a part of your parasympathetic nervous system. That's not rest or digest. There's two parts. There's a rest or digest, which is great for relaxation and digestion and good sleep. And the other part is a facade mode that we don't really want to get stuck in. And that happens when we go through trauma. We just kind of, it's like a deer in headlights, right? And some people call that learned helplessness as well. And so if we're in that mode, it does help to have support from others to help you to get to where you feel like you can start doing things again, you know? Because it is kind of a trauma state to be in. I've been in it before with a back injury in the past. And I just got to be so scared to do anything, to lift any weights. And then I had to hire somebody. I had to hire another trainer to help me through the process. And so I could learn to trust that I wouldn't hurt my back again, you know, and trust that process. So that is another thing to think about. Where are you in your life? Have you gone through a traumatic event recently? Are you going through a lot of stress? Are you coming back from going through a lot of stress? Do you feel like you just kind of can't get yourself to do anything? Is it a fear thing? Is it, you know, just, or is it just not feeling motivated, like low energy or something like that? Maybe you need something else to do. Maybe something that really will be fun, like rock climbing or, you know, that kind of thing, maybe something out of the box. So those are ideas. Those are places to start.
What are some of the ways that you can help people break through that trauma and learned helplessness?
Yeah. Like I said, with support, for sure, getting support, either someone like a really good coach that you can work with. It can also be like a therapist or someone you might have to talk. It might be something you need to talk through and then hire someone to help you move through it. And so those are, I would just say hire, get some support with that, you know, cause it's really hard to get out of learned helplessness on your own. Very hard. Sometimes people don't even know they're in it. Yeah. And so,
and you're just stuck.
Exactly. That's stuck exactly
and
right.
Think I don't have the energy to get up and do what makes me feel good.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. Yeah. Yeah. It's not a fun place to be, for sure.
Yeah. I love, I've done Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu for the past, you know, over 10 years, maybe getting close to 15. And I'm nowhere close to where I, you know, there's people that I started with on day one that are like black belts now. And I'm like the second belt, you know, I'm a blue belt. And it's just been, you know, like on and off the whole time. And what's happening now is, yeah, I'm having a hard time, getting motivated to go. I don't know where I was going with that. Let's see, on when you started learning about all this, the alternative holistic methods in the 90s, what was it like say trying to shop organic in the 90s?
In the 90s.
Funny. That's 30 years ago.
I know. I actually think I think it was more so, I would say early, like, yeah, this is after I had my first son. So it'd be probably after 2001. So yeah. Early. Yeah. Yeah. And it was hard because, like, I don't even know if Whole Foods was around back then.
Yeah.
I'm not even sure if it was. It might have just been starting out.
Were you in Portland at the time?
No, I was in Atlanta, Georgia, actually. Yeah. And, you know, we went to farmers markets and so we started out really seeking it out. It was a little bit more, especially with gluten-free, it was a lot harder to find those things, you know? Yeah. They did not have nearly as many products out there. So you really had to be creative, and mostly gluten-free did not include like any products that were, you know, no processed food products. It was mostly just, you know, meat and vegetables and fruit and stuff like that. But so you had to work. We had to work a little harder initially to find that stuff for sure. Yeah. It was, and then when Whole Foods came around, that was like the organic Mecca. It was like, oh my God, this is amazing. You'd walk in there. It's like the Garden of Eden. And, you know, as you walk in there, it's like,
yeah,
it was amazing. It was always amazing to me. First of all, how beautiful everything looked. You know, it's changed a little bit now, but it's kind of this pretty much the same as when Amazon bought it. But, you know, when we used to go in there, it was just like incredible to see because we hadn't, you know, been exposed to anything like on that scale that was organic before. And we look at the, and it would talk about all the farmers and we're like, oh, this is so cool. You know, it came from a local farm. And so that was the first time that we started connecting. We were able to start like seeing those things and connect with that. And I just remember when I was a kid, like we had a local dairy and they would bring the milk to the door and it was awesome. Raw milk?
Was it pasteurized?
It was raw. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it was a very close. Yeah. We lived in a suburb, but it was kind of out in the country. So
yeah.
Yeah. It was a local dairy. They would deliver our milk every morning. I mean, yeah. Every week. Sorry. Yeah. So it was. So it just brought me back a little bit with that kind of thing and reconnecting with my food that way, which I think is so important. Because you know, what we're taking into our bodies, the energy of it is also very important, right? And how it, you know, the process it's been through, how it's been treated and all that. Yeah. And then you taking it in, like, what are you thinking about it? Are you appreciating it? Is it coming in? You know, are you, that's going to allow more, you know, better digestion, easier to take in and assimilate and everything. So.
Yeah. It was really cool. We just got two little dairy sheep lambs.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
And we went up to the lady's homestead who had them to buy them from her. And she showed us how to, they're not ready to milk yet. They have to get bred first and then have babies so we can milk them. But she has a whole bunch and she showed me how to do it. So I milked a sheep last week for the first time I've ever done that of any kind of animal, you know, before. And she sent us home with like a 1/2 gallon jar full of sheep's milk.
Oh wow.
And I never had
it taste.
Oh my God. It's so incredible. It's amazing. And yeah, if you look it up on the internet, like anything about sheep's milk, it's like it's like 9 out of 10 people prefer it to cow's milk. It's super good.
Really good for you. Yeah. Yeah.
It's
totally.
It's really,
but then you also look and they say, you know, beware, there's bacteria.
Yeah.
I know.
Pasteurize.
But did you remember hearing about that though, when you were younger? Like when I was younger, nobody said that. And we always drank raw milk, you know, I'm just like, what changed? Right.
Yeah. Yeah. All I did, I just took it. I had like they sell like little filters at like Wilco or the farm store that you can use for it. I have like a fine mesh filter that I use when I make kefir and I just poured it through there. And there was like a couple pieces of dirt that stayed in it. And then it was like perfect. We drank it, you know, we had that jar going for like a whole week and it's right at the very end of it right now. Still got like one more cup of coffee left, but it's so good. I know, we talked, we both listened to the Higher Side Chats and I just listened to the most recent one with this guy, Jeffrey Smith on. Did you hear that?
I don't think so. What was that one about?
It was about, non-GMO versus organic and all this stuff like that. And it was pretty scary, but, what do you think about, you know, when you started shopping at Whole Foods in the early 2000s and what was called organic and non-GMO. I don't even know if they're saying non-GMO then. I remember when that I think that was like a big deal in like 2010 or something. I remember I was living in Marin County and there was a bunch of stuff on the bill, like around 2010 on the voting bills in 2010, 2011. But he made the point that organic is stuff that's labeled organic is much more important than stuff that's labeled non-GMO. I still don't really trust anything that's labeled organic. And I kind of feel like it's just a way to extort money out of people. But what do you think from then to now about
Yeah, it's really the only thing we got at this moment. You know, it's the only thing that can tell us, you know, if it's really, and again, yet, like, you're right. Like, just because it says organic doesn't mean everything about it is high quality. But it's the highest standard that we have right now. So, but yeah, I just recently had Eugene Trufkin on my show, who wrote a book called Anti-Factory Farm Shopping Guide. It's a great little book that you can take with you anywhere. And he goes through all the labeling that we now have, which is so confusing. And, you know, the labeling was not nearly as extensive back then when all this stuff started coming out. Now you've got so many different, you know, so many different eggs. I mean, I can't remember. He said, like, there's like, I don't know, 7 to 10 different kinds of eggs you can buy now. And, yeah, it's just crazy because of marketing. They're trying to get you to do as the least amount they can, you know, and make it as cost effective as they can, and, you know, get you to buy it because you think it's healthy. So, you know, it can get kind of confusing to the consumer for sure. And then we'll just end up buying what we know, you know.
Yeah, it's almost like organic. The organic label is like the new version of the low fat label that everybody, you know.
Well, yeah. I mean, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, I think you can never go wrong when you go to your local farmers. Like in Portland, we have in Oregon, we have some great farmers out here that you can have, you know, you really could get most of your stuff from most of them if you have the time to do that or get it delivered somewhere. But yeah, I mean, it's, and, you know, the other thing is it's not even sometimes for me, it's not even about organic. I mean, it is about organic, but even organic food can be sitting on the shelf. Like, you know, sometimes you get some of the produce, it doesn't taste as good as if it were fresher, you know? So, a lot of the nutrient quality goes down, or if they pick the fruit too early, it's not allowed really to get the nutrient at all the nutrients it could get into it because they pick it so early because they want the shelf, you know, they want it to look good on the shelf. So, yeah, but you know, there are some, I still like to support organic more than I do the factory farm meats and foods and stuff like that and GMO foods, because, you know, these are the things that are, we just had Earth Day. I mean, the things that are really destroying the earth is the monocropping, you know, how we're farming the land. And and that for some reason never gets brought up with people. They all divert to these other things, you know, but it's how we're farming the land at this quick rate of just killing the soil basically, and it not being able to regenerate fast enough. So, I want to support the farmers that are doing the regenerative. And I think actually, you know, this is good to bring up in this discussion, is that regenerative farming is even better than organic farming. And then you also have permaculture farming and biodynamic farming, which in biodynamic farming, everything stays on the, nothing goes out of the farm, right? Until it gets sold. So it's all coming from within that space. And so that's the best kind, but it's very hard to do on a larger scale. So really the regenerative farmers, are doing really great with keeping the soil replenished. And then Joel Salatin, if you know who he is, he uses permaculture to do his. And so, I mean, it makes sense if you think about it. Why are we doing what we're doing right now? I've always thought about this, like, of course, yeah, people are making money. They're convincing people that this is how we're going to feed tons of people, but it doesn't really make sense in how nature works and how, you know, I just had a discussion with Eugene about soil. We're like, okay, why do we need to create something that Mother Nature has already created perfectly, which is fertilizer, right? I mean, you know, manure is what we use to make fertilizer, and it all happens naturally, but yet we're using this chemically derived fertilizer that's basically killing everything. And it's also not really producing great great produce or anything like that. It's pretty poisonous for people. So yeah, it is kind of backwards with that whole thing.
Can you explain what regenerative farming is?
Yeah, it's usually, okay, so like Adam was talking about, sometimes the organic certification is very expensive. It is expensive for most farmers, and sometimes they don't have that, but they're doing regenerative farming practices, which is, you know, basically like they're not using any chemicals, and they are doing a similar thing like permaculture, where the chickens are eating off the ground, and then they're, the cows are pooping on the grass. I actually said that backwards. And then the chickens go afterwards and they eat that, you know? And so it's kind of like everything is dependent on each other. It's a cycle. Uh-huh. And you do it in a way where, you know, the land regenerates itself, the soil regenerates itself. That's the idea behind it. And so you don't have to keep putting fake fertilizer over it and killing the soil in one spot, having to go to a different spot and use up that spot and waiting, you know, years mm-hmm. to use this other spot. It circulates much, uh-huh. much more naturally. So, and then on top of that, you also get animals and plants that are natural as well. They don't have chemicals. They don't have any GMOs. They're also not eating grains. They're eating what they're supposed to be eating. Cows should be eating grass, you know? So, chickens should be eating bugs and eating off the ground as well. So this is what they're supposed to be eating. not the whatever they want to throw away, you know, the soy, all the soy that they're giving these animals. Of course, you know, if they eat the soy, then you eat the soy if you're eating those animals too. So it's not really, first of all, it's not a great way to treat an animal, you know, to give them something like soy instead of what they're meant to eat. And then secondly, you're also not treating your body well by eating that. So,
give people too much soy, you get Portland.
Yeah. Well, that's what a lot of vegans go towards, you know, because it's like easy to eat. I guess it's very plentiful and that kind of thing, but it's really not good for you.
If you're doing veganism for any sort of like moral purpose besides health, because you think it's better for you, which I don't agree with at all, but that it's not morally right either to eat monocrop soybeans or
not at all. It's actually, in my opinion, it's worse because we shouldn't be supporting factory farms either. I don't support factory farms, and I don't like to support monocropping either, because like it is destroying the earth. Yeah. literally.
Well, that's how we got the Dust Bowl.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. And it takes a lot of water too. Like most of those plants that are in that kind of monocropping environment need lots of water, because they're made up of water. Mostly there's a lack of nutrients because the soil is nutrient deficient. So they have a ton of water in them.
Yeah. It takes something like, I can't remember what the stat was. I remember hearing it. It was like 5 gallons per almond or something like that.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It just doesn't make any sense. We could save so much time and money and resources just by doing it the natural way. And that's kind of the point of my book. You know, I just want to expose people. Hey, this is an option here. It could be so much easier. Life shouldn't be, it doesn't have to be this complex, you know? And you don't have to be scared into wellness. You know, there doesn't have to be that fear factor. You know, you can just do it out of the pleasure and the joy of wanting to just feel good, you know, why not? So, I had an experience a while back, which I do have in my book. And you and I talked about this, Adam, when we were at the restaurant. And, I had no idea all this stuff was, you know, going on. And at the time, this was back like in, 2006, maybe.
It's pre Del Big Tree.
Yes. Yeah. So, I was a young mom. My son was 18 months. He went to get his 18 month vaccinations. And like that week he started getting a fever. He started throwing up. And I was like, I started, you know, it mentioned it on the sheet of paper that they gave us that that might happen. I was like, oh, okay, this is probably because of the inoculation he got. And it started getting worse.
It was mRNA, right?
No, it was MMR, I think.
Oh, sorry.
They didn't have mumps.
That MMR. One back then.
Yeah.
Measles, mumps, rubella.
Maybe they did. I don't know. But measles, mumps, and rubella, exactly. So it started progressing. It started getting worse. And, I had a doctor's appointment myself. So I said, I need to go do that. And so I had a babysitter with him for an hour. And she calls me up. I'm like about 20 minutes away. And she's like, he's not breathing. I'm like, okay, call 911 now. And, hang up the phone, call 911. And I had no idea what was going on. And I called 911 as well. I was freaking out and rushed back home. By the time I got home, the ambulance was already there. And, you know, I was like, he was okay, but he was passed out. He totally had passed out. And I was thinking to myself, what is going on? What happened? And so we're driving to the, you know, in the ambulance to the hospital, and he starts having a seizure. And I was like, oh, okay. He was having a seizure. She thought he wasn't breathing, you know, like he was having, and it kind of is a similar, it looks similar when someone's having a seizure and when they're like having a hard time breathing, it could be misunderstood that way. So, I was like, okay, this is serious. And so we got him to the hospital. It was very scary because I looked at my son and I was like, he looks vacant. Where did he go? I was really worried that he was going to develop something like autism. And I wasn't, you know, I had no idea. This is way before I had learned about the immune system, before I learned about what's going on with the pharmaceutical companies and all of this. And this was our red pill, so to speak, to wake up to that in our lives, my husband and I. So they got to the hospital. We got to the hospital. They were doing all these tests. They were all inconclusive. They were getting ready to do a spinal tap test. And I was like, oh, this feels like it's, you know, I was starting to get really nervous. And then they decided for some reason not to do that. And so we talked to the doctor and, he told us some things and he's like, I had the sheet of paper. I was like, it's a vaccine, right? Because look, it says to the T here, exactly what he went through. Exactly. It said 1 in 14,000 will have seizures after this vaccine. And he's like, oh, no, it's not the vaccine. I was like, oh, okay. We were just like, what? That doesn't make any sense. And so the nurse comes in and she's like, well, what did the doctor say? And we told her and she said, oh, okay. Well, yeah, that's what they have to say. They all say that. She said it was the vaccine.
And this was in Atlanta, right?
It was in Atlanta, right next to
home
CDC,
of the CDC,
actually.
Yep.
Yeah. We were at a hospital next to the CDC. And, but it was really just weird to me at that time because I didn't know about any of this stuff back then.
Was the doctor
how the doctors
was
were
it doctor both, Son, was it Sanjay Gupta was it your doctor
no thank goodness no it was a neurologist and my pediatrician, and they both like denied that it had anything to do with it. And I was like, wait a minute. I was like, my pediatrician gave me the sheet of paper and it says exactly what happened to him. Like, how can you just tell me that isn't what happened? And she's like, no, I think he has epilepsy. And I'm like, really? Like, that doesn't make any sense. He's never showed any signs of any of that. And so I ended up changing doctors after that. And
how long was this after he got his shot?
This was the week after the week he got his shot. So this was 3 days after.
Oh,
yeah.
Lord.
Yeah.
So why even hand out this piece of paper that says if you're
because
just
well, nobody
I think
reads
they have
it.
To. Well, they well, I read it because I was like, I wanted to know what was going on, you know? And, And also at the time, even though I wasn't as privy to everything and the way I am now with wellness, I still, part of me thought I should read this because this is, you know, if they're giving me a sheet of paper with all these side effects, I should definitely read that, you know, like it seems important. So even before all that happened, I had read it and the reason I got the paper was because I remember reading it, you know, I was like, oh my God. So, yeah. So it was a very stressful time for me in that moment, both me and my husband. And, you know, we thought I was really scared because I just thought he was not coming back. And finally, he did regain consciousness and he came back to, you know, and he's now totally fine. But we just decided never to get vaccinated anymore after that experience because, you know, why would I put my son at risk for that again? Like, why would that would be so silly? You know, why? I mean, it would be irresponsible of me to put him in that situation. And what that did though, and I wrote this story in the book is the reason I say this, is because it led me down a path of really wanting to understand immunity better and wanting to, and that led me to understand my health better. So for some reason, we tend to just, I don't know, like separate all these things out, like immunity's here, you know, our wellness and our fitness and our nutrition are over here. Sorry about this.
Okay.
Somebody's cooking upstairs. I told them to be quiet while we're doing this.
That's okay. All right.
Okay. Okay. He's so
waving the dish rag over the
exactly. That's what they're doing.
Yeah. So, I use the door sometimes.
Yeah. My son just sometimes he cooks up there and then this is the son I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So like he just, I don't know. He burns something, you know, probably, but, anyway,
it's from MMR.
Yeah. Right. So, it took me on a path learning about the immunity, right. How the immune system works, how that relates to our wellness, how it relates to, you know, our immune system isn't like this one trick pony kind of thing. You know, it's working all the time for us, not against us. And it really comes down to how you support it. Like this support is a lifetime of support. It's not just like, oh, I just need to, you know, take something this weekend to help with my immunity. It's like this takes persistence on your part to do that. So it's like keeping your inflammation down on a, you know, on a regular basis with good healthy food. And this is why I bring it up, you know, the healthy food, the exercise, doing things you love to do. You know, if these things are coming into your life that you just feel like you're conflicted with, right? Even just emotionally, or you know, it's going to create inflammation in your body. This is going to create stress in your body. And so stress that's just not necessary. So anyway, it like I said, it led me down this path of really learning about it because I never wanted to be in that situation again. I didn't want to put him in harm's way. And I also wanted to make sure, you know, because this was also a time where people were actually still pretty judgmental about not getting vaccinated. There was pressure then too. It just isn't at the level it is now. And so I was already used to that. You know, once I validated that for myself, I was like, this is how it's going to go. And this is what we're going to do. Because I did have to be clear, you know, I needed to do the research for myself and be clear at that time because I did not have that knowledge at that time. So, knowing what I do now, and even like I had Sherry Tenpenny on my show a while back. And
yeah, that was such a good podcast. I think it's episode 91.
Yes.
If you guys go to Integrate Yourself podcast, episode 91, Sherry Tenpenny with Allison. And it's so interesting to listen to because I think it's in December or January of 2020. So it's before.
I think it was 2019.
Maybe. Okay. So like, maybe December of 2019. So it's right before. And I remember at one point she's like, yeah, you just need to go to YouTube and look up. There's so many, you know, alternative, like not, it shouldn't say right? anti-vax, or I can't remember, it says Amazon or YouTube or something. But it's like, oh, those aren't there anymore. You know,
they're not. Yeah. Well, that's the thing that was so weird is that the, you know, the alternative health, which I knew as alternative health and what I really, you know, relied on, it just fell apart. Like it fell apart and it got censored. So, I was just like, I was taken aback by that so much that could even have happened. I couldn't believe that they were able to censor that, like Sherry Tenpenny's show got taken off YouTube on my channel. I still have it on my podcast, but you know, they took it off of YouTube, and that was after it'd been up for 3 years, you know,
yeah.
And it had a ton of views and somebody must've complained. I don't know, but,
It was probably just her name, you know.
It probably was, yeah, because she was one of the dirty. What is it?
The disinformation dozen.
Disinformation dozen, yeah. But she was great. I mean, I love the information that she shared. And really, you know, there isn't, and she's right. There's not really a whole lot of evidence for vaccines being effective and safe. There's just not. I never found it, you know? So in my mind, I was like, this is what's right for me. I mean, everybody has the right to make a decision, but at least go into it. I think Pam Popper one time said something like, you know, people do more research to look for a new car than they do for a freaking medical procedure, you know?
Yep.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, you know, how is that happening? Right.
Yeah. Deborah, what does it make you feel like when you hear someone like Allison, who's, you know, a mother like you, mm-hmm. and obviously mm-hmm. Had this experience, and then who's on top of it extremely well educated, who educated herself, you know, after this event happened, and is, you know, was health conscious before, but still kind of had the wool pulled over her eyes about you know, pharmaceuticals.
Listening to your podcast with Sherry. And, you know, I think she gave the example of, you know, you have this heirloom vase and you treat it, you know, you put it behind, you know, a locked door and you keep it safe. And then you just take your kid and say, here, do what, I mean, I'm that mom. I was that mom where, I remember taking the older of my two children, Emily's, Adam's wife, and at 3 months to get her first shots. And, you know, I brought her home and she was miserable and her butt just got gigantic and rock hard and red and hot from this shot. And I'm thinking, oh my God, what have I, you know, but this is what my doctor tells me I should do. And I was that mom. I definitely said, okay, he knows, he's the one who studied, he's telling me this is the right thing to do, this is my doctor, this is the doctor that I've selected for my children. And
yeah,
but you said even after that you went back and talked to him about it, correct? And he said, oh no, it's just a normal
normal reaction.
Yeah.
The problem is that, and this is what I realized, is that some doctors don't even know. They're just going by what they've heard from the pharmaceutical companies, right?
Yeah.
So there's just too much information for them. There's too much for them to know about all those, you know, side effects, or if it's even safe and effective. Honestly, they are at this point, it's impossible. I mean, you know, especially with this current one. And so, it's up to each individual, like you learned, Deborah, and I learned, you know, it's up to each individual to really take responsibility for doing the research, or at least asking questions and getting curious about it, because it's like, you know, as a mom, we have intuition about these things.
Yeah. Right? I'm trying to appeal to as many women as I can this way, because I know that, like, you know, when they talk about women who've had, you know, who are claiming that the vaccines cause autism and stuff, they're like, oh, like what, Jenny McCarthy, it's Thighmaster, they're way different, that's Suzanne Somers, Deborah.
Suzanne Somers, yeah, that's right.
They're like 30 years apart, but Yeah, it's just I'm trying, like, I don't think if you tell that story, if someone comes and has this conversation that we've had for an hour, another woman like Deborah, who is quick to call people anti-vaxxers and say, you know, causation isn't correlation, although it's been debunked, everything like that, like what my mom would say. And my mom's a mom, you know, it's like, I don't know if she would be able to listen to your story. She would still probably call you a kook, you know, and I don't understand how that's possible. I know Deborah's open-minded to it, but.
Well, it's hard for people to actually, it is hard to do that without having a personal experience with it. Sometimes it's just listening to someone's story is not enough.
Yeah.
So, you know, I went through it. I knew how it felt when I was going through it. And I knew, you know, the decision I wanted to make for myself. I'm not telling anybody else what to do. Everybody can. I just don't want to be forced to do something that I don't feel like is right for me, you know? And so that's where I think people are drawn, you know, that's where I draw the line is, you know, I don't want it to be mandated, you know, because this is not something that I believe in. And if someone else believes in it, great. If you believe it helps you, awesome. Please do that, because, you know, it probably will work for you if you believe it does.
It sucks when it comes down to little kids.
Yeah. Well, we're here to take care of them. Like, this is my job to take. It was when they were little, that was my job to take. And I had to make the most informed decision that I possibly could and use my intuition too. And I honored both of those things. Was it easy? No. You know,
there are so many more. I mean, when my kids were coming up, there were maybe three or four inoculations that they had.
Yeah, and that now was me too.
Because yeah. Emily was born in 1987 and the big, mm-hmm. the act was 1986. So I don't know. Right. I know that's when it was all written. I don't know when it was implemented. I have my vaccine card still and it's got 14 shots on it. That's all. That's what I've gotten my whole life.
I think mine had five.
Yeah. That was and it. Like what you're, yeah. you're like 5 years older than me, I think. So
yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, one, I just had John Joseph from the Cro-Mags on, and we talked about what I heard about them pushing so hard to try to get the COVID vaccine onto the childhood schedule. Is if they get it onto the childhood schedule, then it falls under they can't be, it's no liability for it.
Right. Right. Well, yes, because then it's, I can't remember. There's something about like, are they still, they're not liable for it now though, are they? Because it's an emergency
use. Yeah.
Yeah. It's emergency use. So they can't use the emergency use forever. So that's right. What I think they're trying to get it on. Do what you're saying. They're going to, because yes, they will never be liable for anything that happens. And that's the problem. I think the easy solution here is to make them liable, you know, let's take that. Let's go back to 1980. What is it? 84?
86. When they did
86.
Yeah.
And just like reverse that. Okay. Because then they would have to answer. They would have to be accountable. They would have to be held accountable for their actions, and it wouldn't be the same way it is now. I don't understand why more people don't have a problem with that. I think that's really the biggest issue, is that they're allowed to, that they don't have any liability.
Yeah.
Although I think they're going to probably see some lawsuits come out of this.
Yeah. We'll see.
Yeah. Or somebody's going to.
Yeah.
Whether companies or whether it's a company or something, but yeah, it's just a situation made way more complicated than it should be, honestly. And it's separating a lot of people. It has separated many people. I think there are some people that are coming, you know, back into the place of compassion for other people who have had some issues arise from it, this past one that's being pushed. But you know, I think ultimately we should all be able to choose how we want to treat our health and treat our bodies. You know, it's what each person's living in. It should be autonomous, you know, with that. So,
well, let me get one more question out of you and then we'll get you out of here. We're right.
Yeah, in the yeah. hour.
So you're immersed, you've been immersed in the Portland kind of holistic health, alt health kind of community for a long time. And you know what happened when this whole thing went down. Why do you think 95% of everybody in that community fell for it or complied?
That is such a great question. I really don't know.
We live way out here in the woods, so I don't see it as much as you probably do. We were out. We went to Southeast Portland yesterday. My wife goes there every day for work, you know, and you know where she works, and she's getting, you know, she's being harassed every day still at her work because they're still trying to get her to wear a mask, and she's not doing it, you know?
Yeah.
It's really sad. She's being harassed and like,
ostracized.
Borderline physically threatened by men that work at Awakening's medical center,
Oh, wow. Yeah. This is the thing that's been so weird about this whole situation, is that the holistic health community has just gone in a different direction. It's not holistic health anymore, in my opinion. And if you really did believe in the potential, the healing potential of your body, you wouldn't have done that. You know, you wouldn't have gone in that direction. So that's what's confusing to me, is I'm not really sure why, if you're in a holistic health place, the only thing I can think of is fear, and people are just scared. And I think now it has become something else. Yeah.
I think there's people that are genuinely scared. And I think there's people that are genuinely scared of how it's been politicized, and, you know, especially in a place like Portland, being a lot of people aren't built to deal with stuff like the way probably you and I are, where we can deal with the ostracization.
Yes.
And, you know,
it's very much a political issue.
We ate lunch at an outdoor place in Southeast Portland on Belmont yesterday. And like, there's still people where in an outdoor setting, wearing masks to their table, taking the mask off when they sit down, and then like when they get up to refill their water at the water station, putting their mask back on. It's nuts.
It really doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense from a logical standpoint. Then, but the fact that they're still doing it by choice in Portland.
But I don't know if it's maybe a virtue signaling thing or something like that. Yeah. Maybe that's what it is. I haven't really had a discussion with anybody who's doing that to know enough about, you know, what's happening there. I kind of think it's kind of become more of a political issue now, and a political stance. Like, if you have a mask, you're one way politically. If you don't, then you're not. You know, if people are categorizing people that way and making it, you know, they're just not giving people enough credit for being a little bit more, you know, multidimensional. It's like, I feel like if you're just separating people in those categories, like, you're missing a whole lot, you know, about life there. But, you know, I also think that, it's just unfortunate, because Portland has been such a great place, like, since I was, you know, since I moved here. And it just, I've met some wonderful people, that are really amazing at what they do. That some of the businesses here just, you know, they have just such a great local business scene, or, you know, had more so a couple of years ago than they do now. But it's really disheartening to see a lot of that stuff fall away and fall apart, and people really separate within the city, because I always thought the city itself, we were pretty connected. You know, it was a great place to be. It had a great energy. I think a lot of people got hijacked, you know, by all this stuff. It's just, you know, and if you're not grounded in your values and what you believe in, maybe belief is not the right word, but if you don't know who you are and who you stand for and what you know, what works for you, then it's going to be hard to really, you know, be able to differentiate all that's happening right now.
They say, if you don't stand for something, you'll fall for everything, or for anything, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. And so, you know, I do you know, I don't know. I don't know everybody's personal story, and I don't want to assume what everybody's going through, but I think that, you know, I want to try to have as much compassion, but at the same time, I got to move on and do other things, you know? So yep. I got to live my life, you know, and I can't be concerned about that. So, people get to do whatever they want. This is this kind of place. So, yeah.
Allison, this has been fantastic. I really love talking to you, and I'm really happy that I get to know you. My wife and I would love to have you guys come check out our farm sometime if you're up for an hour drive out of Portland.
It'd be awesome. We'd love that.
Have you guys come absolutely. Check out the sheep and cook some good organic food. And
that would be great.
Yeah, it'd be really nice. The weather's going to get better soon. And yeah, it'd be awesome. We have three big chest freezers full of local grass-fed, not technically organic pork and beef.
Well, grass-fed is the
grass,
best.
Local grass-fed that didn't pay, that just, you know. So, yeah, anytime we will, I'll see you for sure at the next No Agenda meetup or with the next one that you go to. Will you bring me a book?
Absolutely, yeah.
Will you
Did I not bring
you
a book yet? Okay, yeah, sure, yeah. Absolutely.
Awesome. tell everybody where they can find you and how to support you and all that stuff.
And how to get the book.
Yes. Thank you, Deborah. My book's at amazon.com and you can find my book at finallythrivingbook.com. It's also at I think it's at Powell's if they're in the Portland area. It's in every local bookstore. It's at Barnes and Noble as well. So pretty much everywhere. My publisher did a great job of the distribution part. But really the easiest place to get it is Amazon. I may be doing a few more book signings in Portland. I'm trying to put those together. So you may be able to find me, on, I'll have an events page, for finallythrivingbook.com. You can check me out there. Pureenergypdx.com is where my coaching website is. And I'm going to be, offering a companion program with the book in June 7th. So we're going to do this 12-week coaching program that's going to help you integrate very important foundational principles in the book. And it's going to be a lot of fun. So I wanted to make it fun for people. I want to give people as much support as possible as they go through this wellness journey. And at the end, we're going to put together a really nice wellness practice that you can basically do, you know, that's unshakable, you know, like, cause I feel like right now people need to be grounded. We need to find ourselves and get, you know, connected to ourselves in this way. So this is what that's going to be all about.
That's great.
Thank you. I'm really excited. I want you to meet my wife. I really want you to be able to help her. She wants to get back into doing some personal training stuff. And I'd really like to do some diet stuff with you as well and help her with her fertility. So that'd
absolutely.
Be awesome.
Absolutely. I'm happy to help. Yes. I'm happy. I've helped many people with that kind of thing. So, yay. Yeah.
But Allison, this has been fantastic. I'm really, really grateful for you. And
Thank you. I'm grateful for you guys too. Thanks for having
me on.
Thank you
so much.
It was an honor.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks guys for listening. We love you all. Peace.
Great weekend.
I'm not doing this for you. I'm doing this for me. I'm not signed on to killing all those old people or those black babies. Fuck you, motherfucking New World Order. I will get your ass. Delay that. It pisses me off. You sign on to playing God, you get burned. And all you dumbasses that serve the New World Order are idiots. Playing God all day. Deciding who lives and who dies.
Penis man.
And then I find out they're all screwing little kids and devil worshiping. Of course they are. Oh, you're the big elites. Oprah Winfrey and Ted Turner and Bill Clinton and Epstein, all in that 7-story pervert building in New York. What a bunch of freaks. And the fact that those pedophiles, and I'm calling Oprah Winfrey one, oh, she burns in hell. Every damn one of you's a piece of crap. And you're going to be judged. So you just continue to enjoy hurting babies and hurting old people and hurting homeless people and turn us all into a bunch of idiots. Because you will be destroyed.
Mom, I'm transgender.